Well, thank you, President, for those kind words of introduction. Master, members of the court, warden, and friends, ladies and gentlemen. This lecture is in honour of Sir William Wilde, or Sir William Osler. We've got two Sir Williams. So Sir William Osler, I think, would be very pleased with us this evening. And if you note his remark, it's good to hark back to the golden days and gratefully recall the men whose labours in the past have made the present possible. I think he would be pleased with our topic this evening. But Sir William Wilde is the topic of this lecture, and I am indeed honoured to give it. And I would like to thank the faculty for inviting me to do the same. The talk really starts with this building in Dublin, in one of the old Georgian squares, Merrion Square number 1. And this was the home of the Wilde family. And towards the front of the building, there are two plaques. And if you look at the plaque on the left-hand side, it honours the fact that Oscar Wilde lived in this building, was brought up in this building. But perhaps among the general public, the plaque on the right-hand side is less well-known. But I think what I'm going to do this evening is put a strong argument forward that Sir William Wilde is equally interesting, and if we study his life, there's a lot to learn. If you look at the list of attributes, it's quite extensive. I think there are 10 that are listed. Now, if I was going to speak on all of those this evening, you would have a lecture of Ken Dodd proportions. And I'm aware that supper follows, so I'm not going to speak at other than talk about William Wilde's achievements as a pioneering surgeon and as a medical statistician. But he had many other attributes. In my talk, I will cover the following bits. One being biographical details, where William Wilde came from in his background, then his education, and he had two periods of foreign travel that really made a big difference to his career, and I'll tell you about those briefly. Then his achievements, his adversities, and he had a few adversities, and then the family, and then a little bit about the legacy. Now, somebody advised me that on these occasions that the speaker should entertain the audience. Well, I'm going to leave that to the Wilde family this evening. So what is there to learn from study of the life of Sir William Wilde? Well, it gives us very good insight into 19th century medicine and the big changes that took place during that period. And it will also tell us about the contribution of the Irish School of Medicine. It would tell us about early specialisation within surgery. Up to that point, specialisation hadn't happened, and it developed. It was a big development in the 19th century. We will also learn about Vienna, which was a very important centre for medical education and for medicine in the 19th century. And medical statistics, something that perhaps we don't think about that much, particularly the statistics related to census taking, which was a big feature of Sir William Wilde's life and achievements. And finally, I'll give us the context about the Wilde family and Oscar. Now, for my sources, there's no shortage of sources, but the three primary sources that I will refer to, book on the left-hand side, Narrative of a Voyage. I'll tell you about that in a little bit more detail. In the middle, a book that William Wilde wrote about his experiences in Vienna when he visited the large hospital there. And the third one is his seminal textbook on oral surgery. Now, there are many books written about Oscar Wilde and the Wilde family, but there's only one biography. But if we look closely at that list, the book second from the left, The Parents of Oscar Wilde, is a good read. It's very authoritative. And the biography that I've mentioned, Victorian Doctor. Now, that biography was written by T.G. Wilson. And T.G. Wilson was an ENT surgeon in Dublin. And the benefit that we have of his biography is that he will have had the insight into William's wild surgical career. A word of warning, there are two Wilsons in this story. So we've got T.G. Wilson and we've got Henry Wilson to come. Now, if we look at the timeline, this does help us to give some structure to the story. And it's based on the life of William Wilde. The early part was his education, including his medical education. Then two periods of travel close together, I think it's in green there. And then the surgical career for about 20 years to 1864, when his surgical career, medical career, came to abrupt end. And I'll keep you in suspense about why that happened. And then a period of relative decline until he died aged 61 in 1876. Now, William Wilde was born in the west of Ireland in Castlereagh in County Roscommon, a small town. His father was a country doctor, and they lived in this house on the right-hand side, house that still stands. The people who live there now call it the Oscar. And at the bottom, you see quite a grand building. Well, this was part of the grammar school in nearby Elphin, where Oscar Wilde received his education. It was also the alma mater of Oliver Goldsmith. And I've got to include myself in the story. I come from that village, and hence my interest in some William Wilde, going back to when I was a medical student. There was an article about his life in the local newspaper. William Wilde started as an apprentice in Dublin at age 17, and he was apprenticed to Abraham Colles. Yes, Colles of the Colles fracture. And his apprenticeship took place at Dr. Stephen's Hospital, and he also studied at the Park Medical School in Dublin, very close to Trinity College. He was very fortunate in his teachers. Not alone did he have Abraham Colles, he had Graves and Stokes. And these were two of the great luminaries of Dublin medicine at the time. Graves, famous because of the disease he described, the overactive thyroid and the bulging eyes. He's also famous for his statement, if anyone cared to write his epitaph, it should be, he fed fevers. And then on the right-hand side is Stokes, associated with Stokes-Adams syndrome and with Chain Stokes breathing. And he had a major influence on Wilde. And it wasn't all for the good either. This is Stokes here with a young Wilde. He wasn't just a good educator. They had he encouraged him socially as well. And you can see Wilde, the young man, looking up at his master with admiring eyes. The Dublin School of Medicine in the 19th century was justly famous. And this was because many of the outstanding and innovative doctors who worked there had visited continental centres such as Paris and Vienna and others, and also Edinburgh and to a lesser degree London. And that's where they learned their trade. So when they came back to Dublin to practice medicine, they were outstanding doctors and outstanding educators. And most of their attributes were based on teaching bedside medicine rather than the more distant learning that was taking place in the earlier generation. Many of the names you will see on this slide are these famous people, Colles features, Smith's fracture, Chain Stokes breathing, and Stokes-Adams attacks I've mentioned earlier. And you'll see Wilde's name appears among this group of luminaries because of his achievements that I will describe to you later. Now, I would like to commend an exhibition, current exhibition at the Royal Society of Medicine on Dublin doctors. Chris Durrett brought this to my attention a few weeks ago. It's an excellent exhibition and it is open to all and open to the public. I commend it. Coming back to William Wilde, age 22, when he'd finished his apprenticeship, he was approached by Graves, one of his mentors. And Graves had a rich Scottish patient. It's always useful, isn't it, to have a rich Scottish connection. And Graves said, I've got this man, he's recovering slowly from illness, and it probably was tuberculosis, and he's got a yacht, and he's proposing to go on a voyage would you go with them? And of course, Wilde readily accepted. But there was a subtext. Wilde had had a relationship with a young woman who was pregnant, and he was advised it would be a good idea to be out of town for a while. It was the tradition of doctors in the early 19th century of going around European centres. And the background there was that if they could go and look at the climate and look at the facilities, etc., these centres might be useful for well-off patients who were recuperating following illness, usually chest disease or TB. And some of these doctors wrote books. So James Clerk, and then subsequently the Queen's Physician, and another Dr. Carter, or two notable people who wrote books about their experiences. And Wilde wrote a book, but I'll tell you about that later. So they set off on their voyage. The voyage took them down along the west coast of Spain and Portugal to Madeira, Tenerife, back to Gibraltar and north coast of Africa, to Alexandria, Egypt, and to the Palestine. And each place they visited, Wilde made observations, and he recorded the climate and temperature, which was one of the reasons he was there, as well as looking after his patient. But he looked at the people, and he looked at their backgrounds, their ethnicity, their politics, their dress, their customs, and he made records of all of what he observed. He was greatly interested in the animals and the plants that he saw, and the insects, and he made records of all of that. When he got to Alexandria, obviously it was a very important centre, and he looked at the medical facilities in Alexandria. When he got back to Dublin, he wrote this book, which was the first one that I described in the introduction, The Narrative of a Voyage. And he wrote, this is a book in two volumes, and you've got to remember that he's about 22 or 23 years old, with quite an achievement. And the book sold very well, earned him £250, and helped to fund his further education. Just to give you a sample of Wilde, the character, he was intrigued by the beetles that he saw in Egypt, the dung beetles. And he looked at it from a very scientific point of view. He saw them rolling balls of dung. He watched them for hours, and he made this very nice drawing. And he speculated about the male and the female and how they managed to roll the ball of dung, and described it in his book. Now, the most interesting angle about Wilde's visit to Egypt was his experience in the medical school close to Cairo. And the Pasha, Muhammad Ali, was the ruler of Egypt at the time. And Wilde visited the large hospital and medical school. And he was quite impressed. All the young doctors that he met, they were being trained. The Pasha was paying them a salary. And of course, the bottom line was that they went to support the army. That's why the medical school was in place. Wilde was upset, because if there was a particular difficulty with the war that had to be fought, the medical students had to curtail their training and go and support the army. Dissection was a particular issue at that time, because in the early 19th century it was frowned upon, human dissection. But of course, with the Pasha being almighty and all-powerful at the time, he overruled the clerics and told the clerics that if they didn't allow dissection, that they would be the subjects. And they inevitably complied. So I think what the strength of this book is that here's this young man, recently qualified doctor, who was going to these centres, and if you read the books, you will read his first-hand account of what it was like. And he wrote beautifully, and they're very thorough descriptions. Now, he was intrigued by his visit to the pyramids. He actually climbed the second pyramid at Giza, which was quite a feat. And he entered the Great Pyramid, and he saw many of the mummified remains, including that bone that you see at the bottom. He thought it was the bone, the humerus of a young man. and he speculated about the cause. Wilde was a man who speculated about everything with authority, but he wasn't always right. But he speculated on how the pyramids were built. He wasn't just a doctor, he was a polymath. So age 25, he's written his book. The book is selling very well. He's back in Dublin. He makes a decision to study eye and ear surgery. Now, one of the reasons he studied these topics was that he'd seen so many patients in Egypt with eye infections, and in the Pasha's hospital at any one time during the season where Egyptians got eye infections, it could be up to 700 soldiers, trachoma and other eye infections. So in order to equip himself for his career as a specialist, and remember there were very few specialist surgeons at that particular time, he visited London, and in London he spent some time here at Moorfields Hospital. He made excellent contacts with the people. He spent some time in the Hunterian Museum. And then he visited a number of continental centres, notably Vienna, the centre that he wrote about and that I will talk about now. That's the book that he wrote, Austria, Literary, Scientific and Medical Institutions. Nice long title. I think I rival him with the long title of my lecture this evening. He visited the Allgemeine Krankenhaus, which was one of the largest hospitals in the Western world. And he was very impressed by what he saw. This was a huge hospital with over 2,000 beds, not counting the foundling hospital and the maternity wards. He saw the great doctors of the day in Vienna. And when this picture goes up, it reminds me of the wonderful courses here at the Apothecaries, the courses on the history of medicine that I've been fortunate to attend. And I thank all of the people who organised those and lectured to us. And also thank fellow attenders of the course who were a great support network, many of whom are here this evening. Now, I don't want to talk about these doctors individually because it's quite a big story, but Drakotansky on the left side was the foremost pathologist in the 19th century. And Wilde observed his practice very closely. Wilde being a great network and worker and being able to get access to these people showed he had considerable personal and social skills. But Rokitansky was one of the first pathologists who worked independently from the ward doctors. And Wilde thought that this gave him more authority, because if the ward doctors carried out the autopsies, they might come up with answers to suit their earlier clinical diagnosis. Skoda, the chest physician, he was very impressed by him. Semmelweis, who subsequently discovered the cause of puerperal sepsis, that is the infection following childbirth. He was a young man at the time. It was some years before he made the discovery. But Wilde got to know him and corresponded with him throughout his career. But his main interest was in the two gentlemen at the bottom, Jaeger and von Rossis. These were the two eye surgeons. And Wilde spent a lot of time observing their practice and wrote extensively about it, to such a degree that in his book he described the operative technique in the most minute detail. And I think for any person with an interest in medical history, particularly related to surgery and eye surgery, it's a great opportunity to actually read firsthand somebody who watched these great men operate. Wilde was a very busy man. When he got back to Ireland, he was approached to become an assistant commissioner to the census. Now, they wanted somebody who had skills in writing. He certainly had those. He had exhibited skills with statistics in the books he wrote, where he kept great tables of temperatures and everything else. And he took on the role, and he made quite a success of it. He made a success of the census because he introduced a scientific approach, whereas previous censuses weren't so good. A census is fine with the list of statistics, but it's really the interpretation of the statistics that's wonderful. And Wilde's interpretation of the causes of death, he analysed 1.1 million deaths that had occurred prior to 1841, and made a magnificent job of that. Now, while carried on being the commissioner for the census for another three cycles, including the one immediately following the potato famine, and it's a very valuable record. He also introduced particular details about the deaf and dumb. These were statistics that had never been collected before by anybody. And just don't take my word for it. Recent commentators generally accepted that these censuses were highly authoritative. Sir Peter Froggatt, the epidemiologist, Wilde was the first to collect data of biological and social significance on a worthwhile scale. And Matthew Woolard, who's currently the director of UK Archive, speaking of the 41 census, well, you can read it. He certainly thought that it was a landmark census and that it set the groundwork for future analysis of census. Now, coming back to the life of William Wilde, and he's still William Wilde at this stage, 1844, it's time now to get going on his surgical career. And the way he went about it was that he set up a dispensary and he gave free treatment to the poorer patients in Dublin. This was with eye and ear diseases. And they went then and told their masters or more wealthy people about it, and then they came and paid fees, and subsequently he established a subscription list. But throughout his career he was known for his philanthropic efforts, and he always treated the poor people. He kept a great deal of statistics on his efforts, and I'm not going to take you through that, but it's just to give you the feeling for the man and his attention to detail in recording statistics. And of course, when he wrote his book later, that was extremely helpful. Now, later on, Wilde was assisted by Henry Wilson. And remember, I mentioned Henry Wilson earlier. Now, if you look closely, you will see that Henry Wilson was born in 1838, which coincides with the year that Wilde was away on his voyage. In fact, Henry Wilson was Wilde's son. And in the vernacular of the time, his illegitimate son. Wilde had three illegitimate children before he married Jane Esperanza. Henry Wilson, just mentioned, and then two sisters, so there was two mothers involved, Emily and Mary, and I'll come back to them later. So on top of all his work with the census, writing books, being a busy surgeon, he took on an editorial role with the Dublin Journal, and he made a big success of this. And he got quite a name for himself at this point. And he attracted top names from Great Britain and from North America to write in the journal. Not just case reports, because many of the journals at that time were full of just case reports, but he had top people writing reviews. And the journal got bigger and bigger, and it had to be published on a quarterly rather than an annual basis. He found time to get married in 1851. He married a very interesting lady, Jane Elgee. And Jane came from the same background as Wilde himself. She was a noted poet and a linguist. And we'll come back and talk quite a lot about her later on in this story. His book on oral surgery, this was his great triumph in many respects. Oral surgery. Now, it was admired greatly at the time, but it's still held in very high esteem. And these are just a few screenshots that I took from the British Society of the History of ENT. So this is current. And you'll see that Wilde's book is at the top of the landmark works. So it has stood the test of time. In introducing the book, in the preface, you will read, and I will read with you, Wilde said, "I have laboured, and I trust not in vain, to expose error and establish truth, to lay down principles for accurate diagnosis of diseases of the ear, to rescue the treatment from empiricism, and to found it on the well-established laws of modern pathology, practical surgery, and reasonable therapeutics. Very determined man. We would now call it a mission statement. So his book had to live up to that, and I think it did do. Wilde was very keen to get away from the quackery and all the home remedies, etc., available for the treatment of ear disease at the time. And this involved pouring all sorts of strange fluids into the ear. Wilde included a few examples, one being to put some tobacco smoke to blow it into the patient's ear. And another one was a piece of rusty bacon for an inflamed ear. And yet another one was some wool, which came from the left front leg of a six-year-old ram. And of course, he was getting away from the barber surgeons and how they operated some years before. The book had eight chapters. And the first chapter, there's a long discourse on the history of the treatment of ear disease. Wilde was very interested in medical history. And the third chapter, inevitably with Wilde, statistics and nosology, in other words, the classification of ear disease. And this is another theme that's running through everything he did, statistics and classification and a scientific approach. He kept a registry of all the patients that he had seen, and he included a lot of details in his book about the patients. And many of them were case reports. Now, you will see this quotation here from Douglas Guthrie, Edinburgh ENT surgeon and noted medical historian, who on reading the book said, "The clinical case reports with which Wilde supports his observations are models of clear reporting. In reading them, one is almost transported to the bedside of the patient." What a tribute. Now, in the book, Wilde described the treatment of acute mastoiditis. And this is a condition where the swelling, inflammation behind the ear, which you will see. And on a modern way of looking at that is with a computed tomographic scan. And after all, as you heard, I'm a radiologist, but this is the only radiological picture I will include. But it's an interesting one. If you look closely at the right-hand side with the arrows, the white arrow points to the ear canal, and the yellow canal points to the mastoid air cells. And if we compare it with the opposite side, the normal side, on the left side, they're all black because they're full of air. But on the infected side, they're full of fluid and pus. And Wilde recommended that an incision would be made down onto the mastoid bone in order to relieve the infection. And these are his words taken from his book. And ever afterwards, this form of treatment was known as the Wilde's incision. Now, Wilde made a prophetic statement about a condition called oturia. This is discharge from the ear. And he warned that you can never tell how, when and where it will end, and what it may lead to. 47 years later, Oscar Wilde died probably from meningitis related to a chronic ear infection. And that's obviously a coincidence, but interesting to tie those two facts together. In the book, Wilde describes some of the instruments he used. Forceps, dressing forceps at the top, and then a snare at the bottom. And both of these have angles along the shaft. Wilde devised these, had them made, and the background to the angle was that the operator holding the instrument wouldn't have his view of the ear canal obstructed by his hand holding it. Later on, these became known as Wilde's forceps and Wilde's snare. And I actually found these for sale in a current catalogue from an instrument manufacturer in Sheffield. Now, not everybody was happy with Wilde and the book he wrote. And like a lot of these interesting characters in the 19th century, he had his rivals. And one of his rivals being Kramer, who was an ear surgeon in Berlin. Wilde had criticized Kramer's practice in his book. typical Wilde. He didn't spare his enemies. And Kramer wrote a long analysis of Wilde's comments, and was obviously very upset by them. And he took each of Wilde's comments and dissected them. Well, that was bad enough. But the editor of the journal, Thomas Wakeley, wrote at the end of Kramer's critique, "By making this exposure, Dr. Kramer has performed a double service. The doctor has put down the writer of oral surgery into his proper level as an author and has consigned his book to the trunk maker." It is almost needless to remark that the production entitled Oral Surgery will not receive any further notice in the columns of the Lancet. The book has obviously stood the test of time despite the criticisms. Wilde, of course, retorted said that Kramer is very ungrateful. He must have been, when writing his letter, suffering under an attack of dyspeptic egotism, or he has lately sustained some impairment for those analytical faculties for which in former times he got credit. Now, I include that because it gives you a flavour of the man. There was no point in showing you instruments and nice statistics. It's nice to know the personality. And, of course, you will be thinking about his son. Meanwhile, back in Wilde's practice as an eye and ear surgeon, I mentioned earlier being joined by Henry Wilson, his son, and Wilson took the lead more on the eye surgery, whereas Wilde, although performing both, took the lead on the ear surgery. Now, I've tried to find out a bit more about Henry Wilson. Commentators said that he was a milder character than his father, and he certainly wasn't confrontational. But he did write some books, and I found this one on the theory and practice of the ophthalmoscope, which had, of course, been recently introduced. The book was written later in Wilde's life, and of course, he'd now got his knighthood. And the son dedicated the book to his father, but of course, he didn't address him as his father. And you'll see at the bottom, he refers to himself as the pupil. Now, a little bit about the family, and I know you're all very keen to hear about the Wilde family. And this is the home that they lived in Dublin, in some grandeur. William married Jane, that I mentioned earlier, and she styled herself Speranza because she came from a literary or art-type background. She was very keen to entertain and had all the leading lights of Dublin and any visitors come to her house. She held a salon and she had soirees. Three children, Oscar being the middle one. And the children were brought up in that atmosphere, meeting lots of people, getting experience of listening to people who'd written lots of books with an arty type of background, and obviously some medical people as well. But Speranza really was the entertainer. She was a very loyal woman and very loyal to her husband and to his infidelities. The pinnacle of Wilde's career was 1864, and note that it was January. And his knighthood was not because he was a wonderful surgeon. It's because of his work on statistical science. And that's just part of the citation. So here we are in 1864, man at the top of his career, successful books, financially well off, happy carrying on with his census work and all his other work, which of course included archaeological studies and antiquities. So what happened next? Disaster. Travers versus Wilde, 1864. Now I have debated with myself whether I should include this, but I must. And the reason why I want to include this is that Wilde's medical career stopped at this point. He never went on to write another book. He didn't do another edition of Oral Surgery. So I think it is relevant to a medical history talk like this to tell you about what happened in 1864. Well, this young lady, Mary Josephine Travers, who at the age of 19 was referred to see Wilde because of an ear infection. She was the daughter of the professor of medical jurisprudence and the sub-librarian in Dublin. She went to see Wilde, a fondness grew between them, and in fact a long-standing affair developed. Now that was okay for a while, but the Wilde family were different in that she went along to the house at Merrion Square, she got to know Speranza, she got to know the family, and but they got tired of her. And Wilde tried to get her to emigrate to Australia. She got as far as Liverpool, but turned back, much to his chagrin. Then Speranza got mightily fed up of her. And it all came to a head when Wilde was giving a public lecture in Dublin. And Mary Travers made up pamphlets where she alleged that she had affairs, all under assumed names, but it was thinly disguised. People would know who she was referring to. So in these pamphlets, she described the affair that she was having with Wilde, and there was something there about alleged rape. The pamphlets were very damaging. She also wrote lots of letters to newspapers along the same lines. And at the time, Speranza was staying in a house outside Dublin. Mary Travers found her way there, and with local boys distributed the pamphlets even to Speranza's house, and one of the children picked these up. Speranza just had enough of this. So she sat down and wrote a letter to Mary Travers' father. And the letter goes like this, and I will read it with you because it is important. You may not be aware of the disreputable conduct of your daughter at Bray, where she consorts with all the newspaper boys in the place, employing them to disseminate offensive placards in which my name is given, and also tracts in which she makes it appear that she has had intrigue with Sir William Wilde. If she chooses to disgrace herself, that is not my affair, but as her object in insulting me is the hope of extorting money for which she has several times applied to Sir William, with threats of more annoyance if not given. So she goes on with a tirade, and of course this became a big problem, because when the letter got to Mary Travers' father, he just put it to one side, he didn't do anything with it. And Mary discovered the letter, and then she had her evidence. And she went along to see a solicitor, and with the solicitor issued a writ, we might call it now, for libel and for damages of £2,000. So the case went to court, and this case was an absolute sensation in Dublin. Courts were packed out every day for 5 days, QCs on either side, lots of terrible evidence given. And although the case was about libel, it was really Sir William Wilde that was under trial, and his reputation and the alleged rape. Lady Wilde took the stand, and perhaps presaging what happened with her son many years later, were very fulsome in giving her evidence. And of course she met those nasty lawyers who tricked her into saying things that perhaps weren't advisable. The verdict went in favour of Mary Travers, and the decision of the jury was to award her with the farthing's damages, but the Wildes were liable for the costs. £2,000, a substantial sum of money. So here we are in 1864, how the mighty have fallen. For the remainder of Sir William Wilde's career, he didn't practice any surgery or medicine. He did carry on with his census reporting and with his studies of antiquities and all his other interests, but it basically was downhill from here on. He became the butt of jokes around Dublin. Students, medical students, are very good at this type of thing. making up a ditty like this. And it's quite tragic, isn't it? Only a few years earlier, Wilde was top of his profession, probably the best known eye and ear surgeon in the Western world, and had a knighthood. And then he's having a ditty like this thrown in his face. He became very dishevelled, didn't look after himself. His hair grew long. He spent a lot of time away from Dublin. And this is a caricature done by the editor of Punch. While Speranza was a very tall lady, and with her tiny husband alongside her with the dishevelled look, this is how he described Wilde as looking like a monkey. Tragedy upon disgrace, really. That's what's happening now. The 9-year-old daughter died of an infection, and this greatly upset the family. She was much loved. And this is probably one of the first recorded writings of Oscar Wilde, who at this stage was 13 years old. And he wrote that nice little tribute to his sister. Now, the two sisters, Emily and Mary, that I mentioned earlier, they'd been brought up by an uncle, by their uncle, William Wilde's older brother. And in their early 20s, they went to a country dance, and they were both wearing wide crinoline dresses. And one of them went very close to an open fire, and the dress caught fire. Her sister, hearing the screams, went to her assistance, and unfortunately her dress caught fire as well. Both got severe burns and perished. And William Wilde was known to be disconsolate at the death of his two daughters. So William Wilde himself died in 1876, age 61. So what about Oscar Wilde and his father? Well, Oscar was 22 when his father died. He was then a student in Oxford. His father was justly proud of his son and his achievements in Trinity College and in Oxford. But of course, he didn't live long enough to see Oscar flourish. Some commentators have made comments that Oscar Wilde's, a lot of his talents came from his family background and what he observed in Merrion Square. In De Profundis, Oscar Wilde honoured his parents and made this moving statement that his mother had just died. She and my father had bequeathed me a name they had made noble and honoured, not merely in literature, art, archaeology and science, but in the public history of my own country, its evolution as a nation. So he held them in very high esteem. I've tried to bring together features of father and son, because I think we quite had a lot in common. Oscar Wilde looked like his mother. He was very tall and languid like Speranza, and his art and his writings, etc., certainly followed the example that he'd had from his mother. But father and son were both brilliant individuals, I'm sure you will agree. They were both masters with the English language. I don't have to justify that comment in terms of Oscar Wilde, but the father in his writings, it's very clear, succinct writing, very descriptive, a bit direct and perhaps too direct at times. Both were celebrities in their own lifetimes, flamboyant personalities. Father was a very direct and edgy, what we might now call an edgy character. Both eccentric, outspoken, and not more than a hint of arrogance in both personalities. Both experienced scandal in their own lifetimes, which led to their downfalls and disgrace. Now, it's interesting to note that peaks and troughs occurred in both lives in the same year. For Sir William, 1864 was the year where he got knighthood, and he finished up with the disastrous libel case. Oscar, 1895, the importance of being earnest, and he finished up in prison. And of course, there's a coincidence that I mentioned earlier about mastoid disease, one being the expert and one being the sufferer. Now, here's a question we would ask, I would ask, would we still speak of Sir William Wilde had he not been the father of Oscar? Well, I believe we would. Perhaps not in layman's terms, but students of history and of medicine would do, because of the achievements of Sir William. His legacy was substantial. He was a pioneer. He introduced specialisation. He opened one of the few hospitals treating eye and ear disease. Wonderful philanthropic record. Seminal textbook, instruments he used, an incision he devised that had been courted for a long time. Huge achievements as a medical statistician, and perhaps lesser as a medical editor. Now, this is a list of honours that Sir William Wilde got in his lifetime. You will see second down surgeon oculist in order to the Queen, a role that was created for him. And the third one was an award that he got from the King of Sweden. He visited Sweden on many occasions. But that's how he was seen in his lifetime. How was he seen and regarded in more recent years? Well, he stood up well. He had to go through a period of rehabilitation, a little bit like his son. People didn't want to know about William Wilde because of all the scandal and the libel and all the disgrace. But in time, his achievements have been recognised. And Sir Peter Froggatt stated that Wilde's contribution to surgery, archaeology and demography must be almost unique. T.G. Wilson, his biographer, in 1942, argued that like his son, also his achievement was great. And he made a case for Sir William Wilde being the greater of the two. But he was a very generous biographer. And he made another statement in the same book, summarising Wilde, a brilliant, hot-tempered, philandering gnome of a man. Interesting, too. Diametrically opposite comments in the same book. And in telling you the story of Sir William Wilde, the great challenge really is that his personality and his lifestyle and his philandering always come up. You cannot push it away. You cannot push it under the carpet. And it keeps coming back and coming back. So for the final word, I'm going to leave it to who else but Oscar Wilde, who had something to say about human nature and its flaws. Each man lived his own life and paid his own price for living it. The only pity one has had to pay so often for a single fault. One had to pay over and over again. Indeed, in her dealings with man, destiny never closed her accounts. Now, preparing this lecture, I've had tremendous support from many people, and many have come here as my sort of cheer squad in the front row. And I'm not going to embarrass them by naming them, but I am very grateful to them. And I'd like to thank you, the audience.